in poems. Caroline, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, congratulations. Your book was selected the National Best Book of 2025. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I'm elated. I'm grateful. I'm honored.
Well, you should be because you said that this book took you 3 years to complete. Talk about some of the obstacles you had to overcome.
Well, I like to think of it as a journey. I think the biggest obstacle was me in terms of expanding my vision about what this book could be. It started out as a much smaller picture book. It was going to be the typical 32-page picture book. And the more I began to research and meet people and hear stories that enlarge my understanding of what her life was like on the Eastern Shore and all the different ways she intersected with nature and conquered nature in so many ways, the more I began to realize that there was so much more to the story. And that 32 pages, it was probably 700 or 800 words. This book, I think, reached 2,000 words. I can't, at one point it was 3,000. And so I had a wonderful editor who helped me to pare it down. She also asked a lot of really good questions that helped me to go deeper. So
Well, Caroline, I want to ask you a key question, and I'm thinking about myself. When did you first learn about Harriet Tubman? Because when I go back to like Harriet Tubman, it was like George Washington Carver, Harriet Tubman. So a few people that you learn about through like Black History Week back then. So when did Harriet Tubman come into your life?
I don't remember the exact moment, but I'm sure it was when I was a child at some point, or maybe a teenager. And then it was years later that I began to think about her a little more, and she showed up in a book as part of a vignette.
Did you ever connect with her as a black woman? Like, okay, well, you say, like, okay, we need these role models. Did you ever see yourself as a Harriet Tubman type of figure?
Every single day, her story has so much meaning for us, for me as a black woman, for us as black people. But on that woman thing, one of the things I talk about in every talk I give about her life and what it was like to travel on the Underground Railroad as best we knew, I haven't seen anybody write about it. But when we think about all the things she did, traveling on the Underground Railroad at night, having to forage for food, having to deal with the elements, she did all of this wearing a very long dress because that was all they had back then. So I think about, how as a woman, and she was a small woman, 5 feet tall, probably 100 pounds, soaking wet. And so she's this teeny tiny woman wearing a dress and having to walk through the woods and, just make her way. And, so for me, that's really fascinating. And also because we learn about some folks who escaped, who were women, but we don't know of very many conductors who were women, who were that brave and that bold and that serious about helping people, clasp liberty's hand, that as a woman by themselves, they would go back and forth up and down the Underground Railroad.
Well, you did a lot, Caroline. You did a lot of research for this book. What new things did you learn about Tubman, during the process of writing this book?
Oh my goodness. I learned about the Blackjacks. And actually, I'd read about the Blackjacks in Kate Clifford Larson's book, Harriet Tubman, Bound for the Promised Land. But I investigated a little bit more deeply, and I thought they were so.
Tell us about the Blackjacks.
Well, the Blackjacks were free black sailors, And in Dorchester County, it's surrounded by water. So you've got rivers, you've got bays, you've got, these waterways that stretch all the way up to Baltimore and or down to Baltimore, up to New England. And these blackjacks sailed those rivers, and they knew how those rivers connected to the free areas of the United States at that time. And so they were able to help Harriet understand how the waterways intersected with the land so that on her travels, she could be aware and she could become, a little bit more astute about how to use the waterways if she needed them. And it really became helpful to her when she was in South Carolina and they had the raid on the Combahee River. She had to know about how water moves and, how the weather interacts with water, because they had to be incredibly stealth about, planning that raid and then executing it, because things went wrong, as they often do when you've got, a big project on hand. So learning more about the ways that she connected with the waterways
You
was
know, that's very interesting, Caroline, because when you think about the Civil War, you know, many times we think it's basically it's fought on land. But when you get into, you know, like South Carolina and Mississippi, you know, we're talking about naval battles, you know.
exactly. And this is a woman who wasn't trained by a navy or an army, but they had so much faith in her because of her outstanding, legacy as an Underground Railroad conductor. And so they were happy to, give her the opportunity to be a part of this military raid. And clearly, her intelligence, her intelligence gathering skills were superior to all. And that was the number one reason they wanted her to be a part of the campaign for the Civil War in South Carolina, was because they knew she knew how to talk to people. They knew she knew disguises. They knew that she was courageous and she was willing to go behind enemy lines to get the information she needed to talk to the people that she needed to talk to. So, all of these things were, my understanding was deeply enhanced by working on this story.
Well, you know, your book, Harriet Tubman, Force of Nature, Biography and Poems, you dedicate this book to your first grandchild. And so I was wondering, what do you want children to know about Harriet Tubman? And I believe your book is directed towards children age 7 and above.
Yes. Well, let me tell you, my first grandchild is 3. She loves this book. And amazingly, the first time I read it to her, when we got to wade in the water and no turning back, she asked me to sing Wade in the Water. And her parents and I cannot remember ever singing that song or playing it for her. But she loves it now. She and her mom choreographed a dance to it. But I want all children to know from reading this book is that there is a Harriet that lives within all of us. We can all be more courageous. We can all be more intelligent about the challenges that we face. And we can all certainly develop deeper relationships with nature. Understand, as Harriet did, that we are nature and we should be moving as one with nature. We should be protecting nature, honoring nature, doing everything we can to be a steward of nature. And when we do that, it not only benefits us, it benefits the entire world, as we're seeing now.
You know, when you say that, Caroline, I think of a book that you used as a reference. You cited as a reference in your book, and that's Night Flyer by Tyra Miles. And that was one of the books that opened this door for me, that Harriet moved around in terms of being involved in nature. He had the understanding of the landscape, the trees, everything. And I wanted you to read on page 8, because you have this poem, What Slavery Says, but the second stanza really captures, you know, the sense of the land and geography and the natural world. Could you read that poem for us?
Okay. The second part, or you want the whole?
No, the entire poem.
Okay. And I'll just say that I wrote What Slavery Says because we use the term a lot, but a lot of young people don't know what that means. And, you know, it's hard to communicate the depths of slavery in a children's book or any book. But
you know, when you say that, it took me back to Howard University. I remember I was sitting in my office and there was a class meeting there of African-American students. And one young student says, well, I know I couldn't be a slave. I couldn't wake up that early. like it was like some alarm clock. And this is a student who came late to class, you know. She got a problem with slavery. And you realize, another thing I mentioned is, I did this once, is that, you know, people had no sense of a bale of cotton, like how much you, or fact that if you are picking cotton, what that does to your hand because of, you know, how cotton grows. And if you're from you know, New York City, Long Island, somewhere like that, you have no idea about cotton.
No. And my family roots are in Alabama. And so I once got to visit my uncle's farm, and there was cotton growing on the farm. So I got to see my first cotton plant and mm-hmm. understand that, you know, there are thorns around the cotton, and when right. you're picking it, you're going to get cut up by thorns. So yes, there's so much that, you know, we don't understand about
right.
how.
Well, that's why we're going to hear you read from your book.
Thank you. What Slavery Says. The American slavery system says this baby girl does not belong to her parents, says she does not belong to herself, says this newborn child because she is black. Because she is black, belongs to someone else, an enslaver. Yet somehow Minty will know that she is soil, seed, root, tree, stem, flower, air, breeze, stream, river, wave, sea, sun, moon, a planetary jubilee, a meteor shower causing darkness to flee. Same as the eagles. Same as the eagles. She was born free, the way God intended all of nature to be.
You're listening to Caroline Brewer reading from her book, Harriet Tubman, Force of Nature, a Biography and Poems. Caroline, how difficult is it to write a biography in verse? And how do ideas fit into format? Did you make a decision to select certain parts of Harriet Tubman's life to highlight and also illustrate?
Yes, it's a process.
Well, take us through this process.
So the first thing you have to do, first thing I did, was outline the chapters, outline the important areas of her life where she's having this extraordinary relationship with nature that helps to fuel her success on the Underground Railroad. So I knew about the Blackjacks. I knew a little bit about her relationship with her father and the fact that he was a timber supervisor and she worked with him cutting down trees and hauling the wood and you know, putting it in a canal that sent it to Baltimore. And I knew that from, again, Kate Clifford Larson's book. So I outlined the ways in which I wanted to highlight her life. I knew that there was this extraordinary connection to birds that all or most enslaved people really loved and deeply connected to birds because they were the ultimate symbols of freedom, you know.
Did you also get into the whole thing like the flying Africans?
I'm sorry.
The flying Africans, you know, that, you know.
Oh. Yeah. So the people could fly, you know,
Right.
did think about that and you know, began to understand more deeply why that was such an important story and remains such an important story in children's literature and in our history. And so outlining the chapters, listing the facts, you know, reading as many different, you know, books and reports as I could. And Kate Clifford Larson was a consultant on the book, so
Well, just stop right there for a second. You're doing all this reading, but you know that you're writing a children's book, so you have to sort of like filter that stuff down and say, okay, this is great. Got this book has nice footnotes and stuff like that, but I'm writing a children's book for 7-year-olds. So how do I narrow that down? And then are there things I'm leaving out of Harriet's life because I just have X number of pages?
yes, absolutely. So after you get all your facts together, you figure out what the chapter's going to be about, you know, then I start shaping it into a poem. And I've had, you know, many years to work on this craft of poetry, and especially in the rhyming format. I've done, you know, so many children's picture books that use rhyme. So I'm writing and I'm listening and I'm reading and I'm listening, and I'm also sharing with other people. I'm sharing with children and I'm sharing with adults, friends who are writers, and I'm asking them to read. I'm asking them to read aloud. And so, you know, it's like a sculpture where you start, you know, with this plain, basic form. And you just start chiseling away, and I've
Okay,
never.
well, that's the basics. Now, what happens when I look at this book? Okay, this your illustrations are here. Okay, and I was wondering, were you doing illustrations before you were writing poetry? That's one of my questions. And then, did you have the illustrations first and then wrote the text, or did the text come first? And then, I'm always fascinated by how all the characters, their clothes are like newspaper, you know, so they're not naked, you know, they're clothed with headlines. And talk about that decision.
Okay, thank you. So I'd never illustrated anything professionally. A few months before I got the contract to be the illustrator, the writing came first. I had a book deal for the text, for the story. And we had a difficult time finding an illustrator. I think we'd been looking for at least 9 months. And I was concerned because that meant the book was getting pushed back for publication. And I have a brother who's a professional illustrator. I asked him if he would be willing, but he was recovering from a stroke. And, you know, he was back to work, he was doing pretty well, but he was suffering from fatigue, so he couldn't do it. And so finally I said, you know, I've always wanted to illustrate a children's book. Maybe this is the time to do it. And so I pitched it to my publisher. She said she thought it would be wonderful. I spent about 3 or 4 months working to create a
Yeah,
portfolio.
but with you being modest. I mean, when I look at this book, I said you must have been selling your artwork before you're writing these books.
Nobody would have bought artwork from me. I wouldn't have sold it. I would have been so
But
ashamed.
you know, this stuff stands. I mean, you could have an exhibit based on this. I mean, you know, putting Jacob Lawrence aside with his migration series, but you know, this Harriet Tubman book is a beautiful book.
So much. Well, I will tell you what happened. I threw myself into it. I spent easily 40 hours a week, 7 days a week working on that book. And it was really, I lost count because there were some illustrations where I spent 20 hours working on them. You know, so I had to teach myself. I went to YouTube University. I took a couple courses, including a Romare Bearden course at the Smithsonian. And I just and I had this wonderful art designer. That was one of the things that happened with What on Earth Publishing. They hired an art consultant to work with me to, you know, provide reflection on all of the pieces that I submitted.
How did you make the decision to clothe these characters with newsprint?
So, at some point, I was thinking about this moment in time when Harriet was alive, and really from the founding of this country. And enslaved people, the slavery system, was the news. It was the most important news that was happening every single day.
Yeah, but you know what I find interesting? You said it was the most important news, but unless you like Frederick Douglass, you can't read. You know, so, you know, your clothes, you know, it's like it's your dress and stuff. I mean, I think it's fascinating what you're doing. But, you know, when you think about it, many people can't read.
Right, that's right. And obviously that was true of Harriet. She never got the opportunity, but that did nothing to stop them from learning and from being absolutely intelligent about what was happening in their lives and what was happening to them as enslaved people. So, you know, I'm a former newspaper journalist.
See how these confessions come out?
And as a collage artist, I'm working with paper, and a lot of collage artists use newsprint. And so for me, I thought the newsprint tells a story. And so we had the ad for Harriet's capture, where it talks about, you know, she and her brothers running away. She escaped with her brothers first, but then they wanted to go back. So then that's when she went out on her own. But, so their words on the ad, and you can't read a lot of the words, but I also came across a publication called The Chronicle from the Harriet Tubman Museum that shared from the late 1700s until the 1900s stories about the African American experience. So there were all these headlines about slavery, about insurrections, and then we also had Frederick Douglass, who owned three newspapers. So I went to the archives to look up his newspapers. The print was teeny tiny. The people are, I just thought it was another important way visually to tell the story of what was happening.
What did you learn from Romare Bearden? Because you mentioned looking at Romare Bearden's collages, and you know, when you think of collage, we immediately think of Romare Bearden. What did you take away in terms of, okay, technique that to say, I want to use what Romare Bearden is doing in my own work?
Well, he had an incredible work ethic. He used, you know, he was not just a collage artist, but a mixed media artist. Sometimes he would draw, sometimes he would paint. And so that opened me up to, because I was not a trained artist, you know, to using other kinds of materials and to not get frustrated, even though I did lots of times, because it was going to take time for what you wanted to show up. And I saw a documentary in the class that I attended at the Smithsonian. And so there was a documentary about him, and we watched, and at some point he said, you have to let the art speak to you. You know, you sit down, you're the artist, you bring the materials, you bring your ideas, but you let the art speak to you. And so many times I had to go to that place where I said, I don't know what to do. Art, speak to me.
About that speaking and telling you what to do, how do you balance the writing of a biography with storytelling? Because you move, you like say, okay, I want to tell this story. Do I sort of like bend the biography a certain way because I want to make the story a little straighter?
What I wanted to do with the story more than anything, and is with every piece I do for children, I wanted them to feel something. You know, I wanted them to come away from the poetry feeling as if they've been moved. So I include a lot of rhythm, you know, easy rhythms that they can remember, that can kind of get into their spirit from the first read. And you know, this 3-year-old grandchild helps me know what's working.
Okay. And let me put a difficult question to you. Okay, so all of a sudden I'm a white parent, okay, and I have your book, and I'm concerned about, well, how is Caroline Brewer handling the horrors of slavery? Is this suitable? Is my child going to feel sad and angry at himself?
So I can take no responsibility for a child coming away and feeling anger. What I wanted to present, except being angry at the system. That's why we lay
So
out.
how do you prevent the horrors of slavery in the children's book?
You do it thoughtfully, gingerly, you know, that we don't talk about blood and whippings. And this story is really about her triumph. And so the horrors are there. When we, for me, it was very emotional to write the end of play when Harriet is not even 6 years old. And I don't write about her experience having to babysit a child and stay up all night and being beaten because the child cries. But her next assignment was to trap muskrats. So yesterday I was at Burroughs Elementary School and I talked to the students about that. I said, so here she is, 6 years old. She's barefoot because most enslaved children didn't have shoes. Shoes were too expensive. And so she's barefoot and she's got to go down to a riverbank or to a marshland and walk in the water and pull out these traps. And inside of these traps are dying muskrats. And I told them, you know, and it's in the book, they're like rodents, but they're furrier and they're fatter and they have short legs. Is that the work of a 6-year-old? Should a 6-year-old be subjected to that kind of horror? And they all said no, and not a 10-year-old either. So it's there. And as a result of this work being outside in the cold, she got sick, but her mother demanded she be sent back to her. I talk about family separation in this book. And her mother healed her. And she eventually went on, you know, to grow up and
We're going to take a break soon, but I want to ask you one question before we take our break. You include a glossary in your book, and I wonder, how do you want a young reader to use it, or a teacher to use it, or a parent to use it?
basically, I want to help deepen their understanding of these terms and how they're used in the book. You know, we only had one page to do the glossary, so we couldn't go into all the ways a word might be used in the English language, but we can certainly talk about how it's used in the story. And so if parents need help explaining something, if a teacher needs help explaining something, the glossary is there.
Okay, so we're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, Caroline, I want you to read some excerpts from this book, Harriet Tubman, Force of Nature, Biography and Poems. The show's On the Margin. My name is Ethelbert Miller. My guest today is Caroline Brewer. She is a literary consultant and environmentalist, and we've been talking about her book, Harriet Tubman, Force of Nature, Biography and Poems. The station is WPFW 89.3 FM.
Is your social justice calendar for the week of Monday, December 1st, 2025. On Friday, December 5th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Sankofa Video Books and Cafe, there will be a book event, Enemy of the Sun, presenting poetry of Palestinian resistance on 2714 Georgia Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C. For more info, visit sankofa.com. On Sunday, December 7th, Siddiqui Educational Safari hosts Next Generation Jam to support their efforts to organize teens on how to resist labor abuses and take 10 teens to Palenque de San Basilio, Colombia in 2026 to study Maroon culture. Cafe St. X at 14th and T Street Northwest from 5 to 8 p.m. For tickets, text 202-361-0501. No tickets at the door. WPFW's Social Justice Calendar connects you to grassroots activism in the DMV. Submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. This is due by Thursday at 5 p.m. at least 1 week in advance of your event. WPFW's Social Justice Calendar helps build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Okay, we're back on the margin with my guest, Caroline Brewer, and she's going to be reading from her book, Harriet Tubman, Force of Nature, Biography and Poems. Caroline, why don't we open with the first poem that you have, this 1822, The Born Day.
Okay, thank you. Beyond a little river, on oak-covered land, a baby rocks in a cradle carved by hand from a sweet gum tree. Araminta Ross is born enslaved is she, yet nobody knows that this one birth in Dorchester County, Maryland, planet Earth, starts a new chapter in world history.
You know, right here on the first page, you do something which is extremely important. You give Harriet Tubman her name, her first name. You know, and many people probably don't know the first name, you know, and you know, it's interesting how you make reference for several poems, just call her Minty, you know, sure, until she gets married and then you see where that she takes her mother's name and stuff. But I've just found this a very nice, you know, sort of a rocking of the cradle type of poem, you know, and to open the book. Could you read the, I'm just going to flip through so give our readers a sense of what happens. If you could read page 10, the end of play, because I think that got into what we were just recently talking about the horrors of slavery.
Yes. The slavery system is so cruel, Minty never gets a chance at school. No nurturing to learn to read and write. Hard labor is the young one's plight. When Minty is hired out, snatched from her mom and dad, she's like a flower being ripped from its garden bed.
You know, you could think about that in terms of what we were just hearing before we came on the air, you know, Democracy Now, about family separations, you know, and when you have this image, snatched from her mom and dad, she's like a flower being ripped from its garden bed. You know, I mean, that's a thing where you get a sense of how fragile the flower would be, how fragile the child could be. And but the whole thing of being uprooted, you know, is what's taking place here. And so I find there, right, what's going on right now. There's a key point, and from page 14, you have the poem 1835, Inner Visions. And I think this is something that we often think about, you know, when we hear the story of Harriet Tubman, you know, what happened to her, why she would get the headaches and pass out and things of that sort, but still have that fortitude and strength to continue. Talk about her inner visions and how you handled this particular poem.
Yeah, so it was, this poem was necessary because of how this experience shaped her life and her travels on the Underground Railroad. She was always a spiritual person. She was a spiritual child. Her parents were deeply spiritual. Later in the book, I talk about how they would retreat to the woods, as so many enslaved communities did, to have these private worshiping sessions with God. You know, they're talking to God. They say God's talking to them. But for her, the experience became enhanced after she was hit in the head when she refused to stop a young man, young boy, who was escaping slavery. You know, in her mind, she'd always wanted to be free. She saw herself as free. So she was not going to stop another human being from becoming free, but the overseer throws this 2-pound weight, ends up hitting her in the head instead of hitting the boy, and so she starts to black out. But she said, this is when God is holding my hand and giving me visions of the promised land, you know, ensuring me that I will one day be free. And so she had no control over when she would black out, fall asleep, you know, become, you know, unaware of her surroundings. But she when it happened, she said it was so meaningful because she was having a conversation with God and God was having a conversation with her. And this was throughout her, the rest of her life.
You know, we often hear a number of African-American women writers talking about this conversation, sometimes with their characters. And I was wondering, in the process of you, Caroline Brewer, writing this book, were you in touch with Harriet Tubman? I know you sort of walked in her footsteps and visited places that she visited. Did you have that sort of sense, like, okay, I'm connecting on a not as a, just a writer subject, but something spiritually is happening to me?
Absolutely. There are a number of Black women I know. We call ourselves Harriet's daughters.
I'm going to leave that alone.
Well, she's got sons too. And it means that you want to be more like her. You want to deepen your connection with the spiritual world if you are a person who believes in a spiritual life and a spiritual existence. And so as I was writing, and certainly as I was illustrating, there were times when I tried to be quiet, to listen, because, you know, I'm coming at this from the standpoint as an illustrator of someone who's never done this before, who's feeling a tremendous amount of pressure, mm-hmm. and you know, wanting to get it right. But understanding that you cannot know everything, you just not equipped, whatever your journey, to know everything, you're going to face challenges. And so mm-hmm. when you face those challenges, what do? You get still and you listen and you wait for an answer. And that is exactly what I did in the process of writing and illustrating the book.
You did an excellent job. Why don't we share with our listeners page 22, The New Vows. And this is 1844, New Vows. And this gets into the changing of her name.
Okay, great. Minty, in her early 20s, takes her mother's first name. As Harriet, she enters a time of radical change. She also says yes to John Tubman, a free Black man who asks to be her husband. To his moon, she is the sun, enough light for him and everyone. When John marries Harriet, major freedoms are taken away. Any children they have will be born enslaved. They could be stolen from them any day. Harriet also could be sold away. John Tubman would have no say. All of him had to love all of her to imagine he might turn the tide of slavery's family apartheid.
That's Caroline Brewer reading from her book, Harriet Tubman, Force of Nature, Biography and Poems. You know, that what you just read is so important because, you know, so many of us came through a period of time, especially in the late 60s, early 70s, of changing one's name. And I think sometimes for women, it's very transformative. And I'm thinking of what's my friend's name? But come to me, I'll just say a little blank. But what happens, this transformation of name becomes very key in terms of a woman taking on sometimes the man's name, of refusing to live that. And that's where I've been thinking of what this actually means, what's happening here, especially when we learn later about when she goes back to sort of free, John doesn't want to come with her, you know, or I think he's hooked up with another person by the time she comes back. At least that's, I saw that in a movie, you know. But talk about that in terms of this transformation that takes place and even related to women today in terms of how important is it to take, say, your grandmother's name, you know, And I was thinking about how sometimes when in the late 60s, we were taking African names, but sometimes by taking an African name, we were severing ourselves from saying, calling ourselves so-and-so the third.
Excellent, excellent point. So let me just say, my name is spelled Caroline. I used to go by Caroline, but I was born Carolyn, and I was named after my aunt. We call her Aunt Sue, but her first name is Carolyn. And so in recent years, I've been pronouncing it as Carolyn, because I want to honor her, and I want to honor my mother's choice to name me after her. And so, yes, it's all about identity. And as we see throughout this book, how Harriet identifies is key to the actions that she takes. And I think that's true with all of us when we really think about our names. My previous children's book was called Say Their Names. And so when I'm talking to 5 and 6 and 7 year olds about the Black Lives Matter movement,
right,
the first thing I do is say, tell me what your name means. Tell me, how do you feel when people say your name, if they sing your name? So names are nature. Names are so important to how we identify and how we identify others. Mm-hmm. And so here is another big moment for Harriet. I mean, this is the beginning of her life as a radical.
Right.
She's a Black radical, because she's saying, even though my brothers were not willing to make this journey with me, even though my husband wasn't willing to make this journey with me, I am going.
Right.
I'm going to be free. I want to say something, though, in defense of John Tubman. He was a free man. And so, as this poem says, he had to be deeply in love with her. He had choices. Maryland, I believe, had the most free Black people in the country. So he could have married a free woman, but he married a woman who was enslaved. He married a woman who could have been sold away from him. He married a woman that he might not have been able to live under the same roof with, and whose children could be sold away. And in fact, Harriet, there were rumors that she was going to be sold, and that's why she was so determined. She said, I've got to go, because I am not going to let them sell me down south, where I will never see my family again and probably never have an opportunity to escape. So, you know, many of us have thought of John as something of a scoundrel.
Right.
You know, he wouldn't go with Harriet, and then she comes back a year later and he's hooked up with another woman. But we have to give him credit for believing in love and believing in this woman until it got to the point where he felt it was just going to make his life.
You know, I was just thinking, you know, the writer I was thinking about with this, the change name, was Honoré Jeffers writing about Phyllis Wheatley. Because what happens is that, you know, we think about Phyllis Wheatley, but then she got married, but we don't use her married name. And then also there's the whole thing about, did he prevent her from writing and things of that sort? So that becomes problematic. But it does get into the whole thing, okay, you know, she is a married woman, and do we take her husband's name, or should we take her slave name that's given to her? And so the naming becomes very, very important, even up to today, you know. So I want to thank you for raising these issues in this book. Now, this is me being a critic. There's two poems on page 24, and I felt that the second poem, The Sky in Her Eyes, is a standalone poem. Okay, so like, for example, if there was an anthology that somebody was putting together, you could submit this poem, and we just, this is the poem that would be there to fill in about Harriet Tubman, okay? And we wouldn't need any other poems about that period. You know, we'd say, okay, this is the poem we're going to use, the carriage, what was going on in the 1800s, and then we can get into 1925, okay? But you've done, this is a very beautiful poem, and I felt when I was reading all the work that you had in here, I felt this was a standalone. If you could just read The Sky in Her Eyes.
Okay, absolutely. And it is all three. Are standalone. They're you know, they're.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, well, you know, since you said that, you know, let me not interfere with you. Why don't you read all three?
Okay. And I'll tell you why they're together. But the first one, Secret Jubilation. Early October, Harriet stamps out all doubt, declares again, she's heading out. She sings herself right off the plantation, hoping the community celebrates in hush-hush jubilation. She sets out alone for the Underground Railroad, that secret network of people, paths, and codes. As a seed of freedom, she's eager to be sown. The sky in her eyes. Traveling at night, Harriet reads the sky. Since childhood, she's held its brilliance in her eyes. Among the trillions of stars way up, Harriet spies the edge of the Big Dipper's cup, pointing down to Polaris, the North Star, which shows the way to go from wherever we are. It always beams from roughly the same place, blanketing Harriet with a feeling of grace. She knows that the steady star's light will escort her to freedom's delight. Silent as the owl. Like the owl flapping its wings with a swishing sort of hush, mimicking the silky sound of a drummer's brush. Harriet makes soft, near silent moves by night, then hides herself away in broad daylight.
Caroline Brewer reading from her book, Harriet Tubman, Force of Nature, Biography and Poems. Anything that you want to talk about how these poems are connected, this little triptych?
Yes. She wanted to, and it, apparently it was customary that if you were going to escape, you let the folks in the big house know. So, you know, everybody was clear and they could come up with whatever plan they wanted to about what they were going to say or how they were going to behave. Well, when she went to the big house, the plantation owner rode up on his horse at the same time. So she sort of just peeked her head in the door and then she started to sing. And so that's why she sang herself right off the plantation, hoping the community would get the message and celebrate, but celebrate quietly, hush, hush, jubilation. And it lays out what is the Underground Railroad. It clearly, you know, is not a real railroad, but it does have a path. It does have people and it has codes that are necessary.
And it has conductors.
Yes, that's right. She was the conductor. And so the sky in her eye, this is true for enslaved people, for so many. They had to, you know, what I want this book to establish is that we have always had a connection with nature. We've always understood the rhythms of nature. We've always understood how the universe moves because, you know, we're operating in it, you know, way before the modern times, the New York cities and the DCs and the Philadelphias and Chicago, you know, we were outdoors. And so I wanted to establish that she was very clear about how she was going to get north. In addition to the people on the Underground Railroad, she was going to be reading the sky. And then Silent as the Owl, this is another way she identifies with nature, you know, owls are silent. They do their thing at night, and then they're up in the tree in broad daylight, and that's why we rarely see them. And so that's how she had to be. She had to take on the form of an owl and move very gently, very quietly through the night, become one with it in so many ways. And then, you know, during the daytime, she and her passengers would be at a station conductor's house and, you know, hiding away, hopefully getting fed.
Yeah, and you also think of the owl in terms of the wisdom and that's associated with the bird. And I think that she is that sort of knowledgeable person. What I found interesting, and maybe you can get into the editorial decision making, the poem that accompanies what would be on your cover is O Freedom. And I felt, you know, there's a certain jubilation that comes with this poem. And I was wondering, was this immediately you knew that this was going to be the cover?
We did not. We actually had another plan for the cover, and after it was designed, the consultant, the art consultant, said, "I think we have a cover."
I think so too. I mean, I felt everything's happening here in this illustration. Why don't you read the poem and then talk about the illustration?
Okay. Oh, freedom. After 3 weeks on the run, Harriet's feet are about done. Her belly growls, sleep barks and howls. Her body begs to be scrubbed, to soak way down deep in a tub. A grassy meadow appears, voice calling, "Enter here, my dear." Stepping on Pennsylvania, free land, basking in the sun's warm golden strands, Harriet takes a fresh look at her hands and asks if she's still the same woman and whether that's heaven across the field. Yes, Harriet's feet are beat, but her soul is happy and healed.
Amen.
I just want to say that Harriet, people ask why poetry. I wish we had more more documentation of Harriet speaking, but when she described stepping on Pennsylvania free land, she described it like a poet. She said the sun came across the field and through the leaves of the trees like gold, and she just basked in it, and so I love the way she framed becoming free officially.
Mm-hmm.
So the illustration tries to capture all this sunlight that she saw. She's in a field. There are some winter flowers here. There's an aster. Asters are here. And, you know, the grass is brown. And she has her hands across her chest saying, "Thank you, Lord. I made it. I feel brand new, you know, now that officially I'm in a place that is considered free land."
You know, when I look at this, as we come to the end of our show, Caroline Brewer, you know, when I see this book, I'm thinking like the Underground Museum out in Ohio and even maybe the Park Service here, that it seems that this book, okay, should be to move from becoming just simply a book to becoming an exhibit that I would see in your panels of your artwork alongside with these excerpts on the poem. But this seems like this should be something in a museum. Is there like a traveling exhibit coming up?
Thank you. From your lips to God's ears, I have wanted that for this book ever since it was finished, and we all agreed that, you know, there was some beautiful images in here. So the plans have not yet gotten underway, certainly not with a museum yet, but I do have a gallery that's interested in showing images, and I actually just got some on a canvas yesterday.
Yeah.
So so I'm experimenting with how to display them.
Well, this seems like something where the Maryland like Humanities Council would get involved in this, because it's humanities, it's history, you know, maybe one of the universities like St. Mary's University, you know, there's universities I can see saying, you know, this would be a good place. And I'm thinking of St. Mary's University because Lucille Clifton, when she was living, was down there for a while. And there's a beautiful mural of Lucille down there. But it just seems that there's a tradition there where, you know, people should see this in terms of the poetry, the full panel work. How large would you make some of these? Okay, 1 minute.
Okay. Great question. I'm sorry. I shared with the kids you know, what the original size of the artwork was like. So often it was twice as big as the two pages together. So this is 20 by 20.
Well, you know what? I'll end you right there. They don't have to be that large because Jacob Lawrence Migration Series is not that big. So you could use that as a model, same way you're using Ramir Bearden. I want to thank you for being on the show. I'll just hold up because we do have a Zoom. This is beautiful, you know, and congratulations for this being one of the best books of 2025. I think we can extend it into 2026 since this is December. My guest today has been Caroline Brewer. We were talking about her book, Harriet Tubman, Force of Nature, a Biography and Poem. The show's on the margin. My name is Ethel Brett Miller. The station's WPFW 89.3 FM.
Mutual aid, the act of taking care of each other, comes in many forms. One such form is supporting WPFW. At a time when so many are hurting, if you are doing well financially and want to do good, we invite you to give the gift of WPFW. Emancipatory media is truly the gift that keeps on giving. A tax-deductible donation can be made anytime at WPFWFM.org or from Sunday, December 14th through Saturday, December 20th, during our pledge drive by calling 800-222-9739. It is your continued support that allows us to do the work of building a more equitable world, one broadcast at a time.
Y'all, I am Jaren with Dreaming Out Loud.
And I'm Ron Motu with the Go-Go Museum and Cafe. This holiday season, Historic Anna Koch is bringing joy from December the 11th through the 22nd.
A celebration filled with daily surprises along Marion Barry and MLK Jr. Avenue Southeast. Christmas tree lighting, live concerts at the Go-Go Museum, and holiday meals and deals from your favorite Anacostia businesses.
12 days of festive family fun as you dine, shop, and explore DC's Arts and Culture District. Powered by the Anacostia Bid, artogogo.org. For more information.
The Congolese diaspora will hold a demonstration in front of the White House at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest on Thursday, December 4th at 11 a.m. Congolese are calling on people of conscience to reject the Trump administration's peace-for-profit deal. Both the presidents of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, and the president of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Felix Tshisekedi, are in town to sign the deal. Congolese say Congo is not for sale. Demand true justice and accountability for Congolese victims of the Rwandan occupation. No justice, no peace. Following the protest, WPFW will unpack the elements of the deal with the Congolese diaspora at 2 p.m. on Thursday. WPFW, building a more equitable world, one broadcast at a time.
The WPFW local station board is hosting a community town hall on Saturday, December 13th from 12 noon until 3 p.m. Our theme is Free Airwaves, Fighting for Community and Public Radio. With the economic upheaval caused by DOGE, the social stress exacerbated by the military occupation of the capital, and the harm inflicted on innocent people by ICE agents, it is more important than ever to have an independent grassroots media focused on building communities, amplifying marginalized voices, and driving social movements. The town hall takes place on Saturday, December 13th from 12 noon until 3 p.m., at the Brookland Bus Boys and Poets, 625 Monroe Street, Northeast in the district. Additional information can be found online at WPFWFM.org. WPFW, building community one broadcast at a time.
Inviting all D.C. hand dancers, Philly boppers, Chicago steppers, Carolina shaggers, and West Coast swingers. The Treehouse Dreamers venue offers dance music from Motown and more every Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. at 4722 14th Street Northwest. DJ Jammin' Dave and other fine DJs provide an atmosphere offering seniors socialization while getting much-needed quality movement through familiar tunes and dance every Friday. Details at 301-922-4064. That's 301-922-4064. WPFW offering wellness through dance, one activity at a time.
On Monday, December 8th, WPFW presents Saving Our Homes, the Crisis in Housing and Homeownership, in partnership with the Washington Informer and the Missionary Baptist Minister Conference of the DMV. From 9 a.m. until 1 p.m., we confront gentrification, predatory buyers, tax sales, foreclosure traps, and the loss of family homes, defending our elders, and keeping generational wealth in our families. The programming continues at 5 p.m., where we'll unpack the lack of affordable housing and the displacement of renters. We culminate in a town hall from 6 to 8 p.m., moderated by Donald Temple and Denise Rolock Barnes, where we welcome listeners' calls. Guests include lawyers, activists, pastors, financial strategists, and government officials. That's Saving Our Homes, the Crisis in Housing and Home Ownership, December 8th on WPFW, building a more equitable world, one broadcast at a time.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel DIs. When we in the DMV, you know we're listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW.